When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have a fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys, you're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to The Coaches Network. My name is Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today, Stephen Maxwell. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Yas. Good to be here.
I'm looking forward to this one. And I'm not just saying that, you know, I think it's always important that, you know, as much as we talk about coaching and we explore the world of coach development as well, different approaches, and you know, I'm really keen to kind of pick your brains on a few things myself. So maybe just off the back of that, a brief insight around who you are and what you do, and we'll go from there.
Easy start. I suppose honored to be here. First of all, your last podcast I listened to was Cody Royale, so I suppose myself and Cody have something in common. I've just completed a master's in applied sports coaching, specializing in self-care and coaching. I'm a coach education manager with Cricket Ireland. I'm a coach developer like yourself, but across a few different sports. I'm a qualified performance analyst, and I run my own consultancy business when I have some spare time.
I'm not sure if you have any spare time, you know, listening to all your roles there, but let's talk about that a little bit. You know, the journey into coach development. How, you know, where did your journey begin within coaching? How did you arrive at coach development? And then we'll kind of pick it up from there.
I suppose my journey started as a player, like most people, those who can't play coach. But I got into coaching at a very young age, I suppose, working on the summer camps with my local club, first of all in football, and then obviously Gaelic football. And that was my journey from about 16 years of age. And then I done a degree in community sports leadership through Gaelic football at the time, because I had already qualified as UEFA B coach. So I went a different route in terms of my degree. Spent some time in America coaching, came home, and then went to coach developer route. I'm a Gaelic football coach developer. I am a soccer coach developer, and in recent times, over the last 4 years, I'm a cricket coach developer. And then when I spent some time in Australia on a career break, I became qualified as a coach developer in softball, because there wasn't enough sports on my CV, so I had to add another one, as you do. So I think my coach development journey is I'm only turning a page. It's maybe two or three chapters in if you relate it to a book. Like any good coach, constantly trying to learn, evolve my own process and just get better and better every day.
That's awesome. I'm really pleased to hear that. And it's great to see that you're branching out and expanding your horizons across different sports as well. So let's go back to the start of the coach development journey in particular. What was it about coach developing or coach development that really kind of caught you or wanted you to get curious and explore your interest in it?
I suppose, like many coaches, being on a coach education course and meeting a really, really good coach developer who was challenging your own thought. And for me, it's those guys or girls who have really good questions, and you have a moment to pause and like, oh my God, I did not think about that. And that's where I kind of got into it. So from an early age, maybe 19 or 20 years of age, meeting some really good coach developers across two different sports and thinking, wow, I could do this. I'd love to be able to do this. And then asking them, how do I get involved? How do I start that journey? And then I participated on the Sport Ireland sports coaching, coach development course. And that's where I gained my qualification. And it's now become a formal recognised qualification on the Irish education system now. So they're constantly evolving coach development in Ireland. And then obviously becoming a coach developer in soccer and football. I suppose I vary my language in terms when I say football. So becoming a coach developer and then constantly doing continuous professional development in the coach development space, and then also through mentoring courses, leadership courses, and you know, trying to learn from different sports and bring it back to your own. So like obviously as the coach education manager with Cricket Ireland, my responsibility is to oversee all coach education, and not just as a coach developer. I manage the coach developers and I'm a coach developer assessor. And suppose trying to keep those guys on their toes in terms of, you know, not getting comfortable. Can we constantly involve how we give feedback to participants? And I suppose that's how I got involved in the masters, because I'm always trying to learn and develop, and I make sure that those around me are on that same path. And if they're getting comfortable, putting them in uncomfortable positions.
It's interesting. Obviously, you talked there about, you know, being comfortable in uncomfortable positions there, and you know, for a lot of coaches, there is a lot of emphasis now around that mentoring piece that you talked about. In a conversation on what's happening with coaches, you know, it's all well and good that you want that mentor and you want that guidance and support. But what would your advice, or you know, where do your thoughts go around the idea that coaches maybe need to start to be a bit more considerate in their thinking around what good mentoring might look like for them, or where they should be looking for that mentor to come from, if that makes sense?
I suppose, like coaching itself, there's no right or wrong way. I suppose there's some really good coach mentor programs out there. I find myself having a critical friend is actually more beneficial for me, and that's me, the individual. We run coach mentor programs within sport in Ireland at the moment, but I find having a critical friend from outside my own sport is highly beneficial, because he doesn't get involved in the technical tactical elements. He questions me on my coach behavior. So am I living to my own philosophy or my process? He's from a business background, so he's asking really good questions in terms of my process and my planning or my application to my coaching, and I find that very beneficial. And it's something that I talk about at coach development conferences. Mentoring is really great. My experience in mentoring, there's always a time limit. So if Yas is going to mentor me, there's a time limit. We might work together for a year, and then it evolves and we move on, and then I might get another mentor and you might get another mentee, or you might get your own mentor, or it could be peer-to-peer mentoring. So from a mentoring point of view, there's usually a time limit, and it's really good if it's going through a specific program. It has pros and cons, the advantages and disadvantages. But what I'd say is you got to have an open mind. You got to actively listen, whether you're the mentor or mentee, because it's a reciprocal process. You know what I mean? Me as a mentor, I learn from the mentee all the time. And I think that's the best way as well. Plus, it makes you a better leader. I hope that answers your question.
No, definitely yes, it does. It definitely does. And I think there's a few things to kind of pick up on what you said there. It's, you know, if the last piece, if I work backwards, is, you know, first of all, it's a two-way process. There's as much to learn from the mentor as there is to offer them. And I say this to coaches all the time that I'm working with, you know, whoever your mentor is, take the information they give you, go and apply it, and then give them some feedback. Did it work for you? Did it not work for you? What did you learn from it? And I think that process can be so fruitful for both parties, right? And then, you know, even the first part you're talking about, just having that mentor and having that critical friend, I guess the question I would have for you, and I've got some ideas of how you, of what you might say, but maybe just to give some context for the people listening to this, what might they want to look for in that critical friend?
I suppose you want someone who has life experience. So not to be ageist, but you don't want someone in their teens or maybe in their early 20s if they haven't gone through, say, university or whatever, or someone who, you know, they could be young, but they've had some really good life lessons. So maybe they've gone down the professional coaching route, for example, if you want to have that. Or like me, I have someone who's a CEO in a business and he's very good at that and he's been highly successful. And that's why I use him as a critical friend, because he's worked his whole way from, you know, that entry position all the way up to CEO. So he's been in everybody's shoes. Someone who's really empathetic, they're able to put themselves in the mentee's shoes, is really important. I suppose there's certain steps in mentoring. So you need to have an ability to build rapport. So like someone who's coming in as a mentee might be very shy, maybe closed off, they could be an introvert. So it challenges you as a mentor to be, to think of really good questions, setting direction, where is this going to go, setting the boundaries. Obviously there has to be progression. So for progression, we have to set goals. And then obviously, as I mentioned there, there's a wind down period. So there's a time limit, it's going to finish. And then how do you plan to move on? I think they're really important. Again, I think like any good coaching or coach development mentoring, you have to be a good active listener. So if I'm listening to yes, if I'm already thinking about what the answer is going to be, I'm not actually actively listening. I want to let you express your own thoughts and opinions, and then I'll challenge them and get you to think maybe go a different direction if I think you're going down the right path.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, you know, I've had a few conversations with coach developers recently, and we're having this debate around that balance between imparting knowledge and seeking knowledge from the mentee or the coach learner in this case. So, you know, so where do you sit on that? Because obviously, you know, by the sounds of what you said there, is very much trying to seek the answers within the person rather than look to offer them solutions. Obviously, there'll be times and places where you're going to have to potentially do that or guide their thinking in some ways. You know, what's your immediate thoughts on that? Because at the end of the day, you're there as their mentor in that case, or a coach developer in some capacity, because you have maybe got some lived experiences and, you know, have some knowledge that they are maybe in need of, if you like.
I suppose the environment is very important. So if we're running a coach education course, it's probably not the right environment to delve into that, because we have time limits. We have to finish the course by a certain time. And you know yourself as a coach developer, some of the best discussions happen in those coach education courses. So it's kind of nipping it in the bud and saying, listen, we can come back to that and we could have that one-on-one conversation afterwards. But I suppose challenging everybody's thoughts is really important. So you know yourself, if you're running a foundation course, you'll have coaches who will come in there for the first time and they'll have their own thoughts and opinions. Coaching, there's no right or wrong way, but you want to challenge their thoughts to get them thinking of different ways to engage those they're going to be working with when they go back to their clubs, etc. So I think asking those open questions, giving learners an opportunity to express their own thoughts, I think within that education course is really, really important. So building in that time, and being mindful that it's a safe environment, that coaches, when they share, that there's not someone in the background disrespecting their that thought, because they could be right, they could be wrong, but that's why they're on the course in the first place, to learn and develop. So it's making sure you're laying down the foundations for a good environment for those discussions to happen.
Interesting. In terms of, obviously, you know, we're working with a lot of that. You know, just thinking about my own experiences now working as a coach, but I've been doing it for probably about 7-8 years now, and I think this, you get two types, maybe three types of learners. You get those that are really, really engaged in the process because they really want to get the knowledge and the information. Those that are coming on board because for them it's just another tick box. Let's complete this award because this award is a means to an end to something. And you've got those other ones who are kind of, they're there because, you know, in essence, they need to do it to keep their job. How do you, you know, what are your thoughts around balancing that? Because, you know, I think there is a challenge there sometimes. And I think it's just sometimes explaining to the coaches around, well, let's explain more around shifting the mindset of the coaches. And it's a conversation I've been having with a lot of coach developers recently around. And I think it's all great that we've got this content. We've got great, you know, we've got, like you said, we have got time limits. We have got things that we need to get through. But my thoughts are, you know, well, if the people aren't in the right space to take on board the information, there's no point in essence trying to give it to them. We've got to shift their mindset and get them to have that open mind, like you talked about earlier, to really understand the value of anything that we are covering and maybe looking to delve into. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's really important to build a rapport immediately. Like, I know you might be stuck, maybe it's a 3-hour course, 4-hour course, but those first 5 minutes are so important as a coach developer. You're setting the tone for the day. So as people arrive, and you know yourself, they might arrive a few minutes early, they're arriving in dribs and drabs. It's connecting with each of them and trying to understand why they're there. And you could use the butcher paper on the wall and, you know, what age groups you're working with, why you're here. And then straight away, you know, okay, I'm not going to group those two people together because they're on completely different wavelengths. And I'm trying to put Yash and Stephen together because they're here. They're going to be really engaged. I'm going to put Joe Bloggs and Stephanie Bloggs over this side because they're here to tick a box. And you're putting like-minded people together. But then when they're in their smaller groups, you can walk over and you can challenge them on their own thoughts and opinions there. And it's a safer environment because they're around like-minded people and they're on the same wavelength. And I think that's probably the most important thing to do.
It's quite interesting, though, because obviously, you know, I think the argument for that is obviously keeping around the like-minded people. They'll obviously feel a lot more comfortable and hopefully the conversation is a bit more smoother. But then I guess the challenge to that would be, would we not want to mix them up to diversify the thinking a little bit and challenge their thoughts amongst one another rather than for us to be the ones guiding those discussions, if that makes sense?
Oh, completely. I totally get that. I suppose when you're meeting someone and you meet them for the very first time, you're trying to appraise them straight away. So Yas is coming in the bar, right? This guy is a really dominant personality. I know he's going to take over any group. So I have to be mindful of that. And then in that case, I wouldn't mix you in with everybody because you've got a very dominant personality. Whereas someone might not be so dominant, I'd allow them to mix. So you kind of have to be, you have to be mindful of the whole group, I suppose, at the same time. Like, we break them up into smaller groups for little discussions. But what we tend to do, especially on our cricket courses, is we move those groups along every 15, 20 minutes. So we're constantly moving people in and we're keeping them uncomfortable because they're getting to know other people and their thoughts are being challenged by their peers constantly. And I suppose that's what I mean about those great discussions where they're learning from each other and we're just facilitating that. And that's what really good coach development is.
It's interesting, obviously, because, you know, you talk there about we're getting to learn off one another. And obviously we're learning as well through shaping those discussions. And it's something I often think about. And obviously, you know, there is spaces out there where we can get guidance and support in this. But who develops the coach developer? Where does the coach developer get that experience? Because now, yeah, this is a tricky one, right? Because I guess it's a never-ending cycle. Someone has to be developing the developer of the developer and so on and so forth, right? So what does that look like? What should that process look like? Because at present, I'm just thinking about some of the practices in which I engage in, whether that be just having conversations like this, whether that be speaking to other coach developers at different parts of their journey. Some people are just starting in, because even from what you just shared with me in the last couple of minutes, it's already got me thinking about different ways in which I can approach things. And it's maybe in some ways confirmed some of the things I've already done. And I thought, yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea to continue doing that. And maybe it's challenged some of the thoughts I was thinking about. So what does that look like from your perspective? Because I think this is a really challenging space, especially with the rise of coach development almost becoming a new industry within the industry. Still fairly new. Where do you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I suppose this is my 9 to 5. This is what I get paid for, so I better get it right. I suppose sport evolves. Every sport evolves, and any team or coach developer that stands still is going to be passed by. So I give an example in terms of giving feedback on courses. Our coach developers, they constantly have to keep up with I suppose technology when they're doing their feedback. So, you know yourself, young people are used to being on their phones all the time. So how can we align our feedback to that kind of mentality, Gen Z? So what we do is, if I'm running a course and Yas is coaching a group and you're being assessed, for example, or I'm just appraising your coaching, I'll get you to get your phone and give it to someone and they'll record you while you're coaching. So straight away, you have feedback and it's directly from yourself without me getting involved. And then when we finish and we sit down, we have our one-to-ones, I have my notes and I'm challenging your process and you might tell me one thing and I'm like, hold on, look back at yourself and you're learning from yourself because maybe you didn't realize you asked that question. And then to our coach developers, the same thing. We now record our coach developers giving feedback. So for example, on the last course, we had one coach developer who was really, really efficient at giving feedback at the end of every assessment on a level 2. 5 minutes per candidate, got through 10 candidates really, really quick. Whereas we had another coach developer, it takes 15 minutes because he's very, very detailed. He writes pages and pages of notes. So for us, for me as a coach developer assessor, how can I bring the two of them together and get it more synced up so we can be more aligned in terms of our feedback? So what we do now is we record all the coach developers, we sit down post-course and we assess each other's feedback and how can we be more efficient? Where can it be standardized that instead of 5 minutes and 15 minutes, we're both taking 10 minutes so that the candidate's getting the best quality feedback, which is going to allow them to be better quality coaches.
Yeah, I get the premise of it. I guess, you know, my thoughts go to, well, as much as we want to get to a point of it is 10 minutes, are we not also equally looking at the effectiveness of that feedback? So, for instance, one thing I'm big on, I mean, I talk about this a lot when I'm on courses. I mean, you probably have similar experiences maybe, but I find that depending on obviously what qualification I'm delivering, what level of the qualification it may be, a lot of the feedback is fairly consistent and, you know, it's still worth obviously going through it and obviously detailing that for each individual, but a lot of it will be fairly consistent in terms of the key messages that keep coming out. So I think there is obviously a place for every single person to get their individual feedback. But I'm kind of probably more aligned to what you shared there. I wanted to kind of learn from their own thoughts and their own thinking. So where possible, you know, maybe record them in action. Obviously, I'm looking at coaches in this case, but the same thing obviously would apply with coach developers, right? If you're getting that feedback and, you know, the consistency of that feedback is there, then you've got something to refer back to. And like you said, you know, effectively start off with that objective piece, let them review it, get their views on the objective piece, and obviously then we can have a conversation around maybe some things that we might agree on, some things that we might disagree on, and a bit of an understanding as to why we may agree or disagree on those things. But I guess the one thing that, you know, the one thing I find most difficult and challenging is obviously working with developers. Maybe. sorry. Obviously, one of the things that, you know, comes into question is obviously the consistency of the assessment process, right? Because I've been in situations where I'm working with other coach developers and we're looking at case A. Case A in this person's mind is not quite there yet. Case A in this person's mind is actually, no, they've done all right. And, you know, it's that managing that process of just how far you go around trying to highlight the positives, everything, versus that of what's actually in front of you, if that makes sense.
No, it does indeed. And I suppose it comes back to your assessment criteria. What are the minimum requirements? So if we're going to pass someone on a course, there is a standardized set of criteria that someone has to take in terms of the technical, tactical feedback, questioning, etc., instructions. So it comes down to the minimum requirement. If they're ticking off the minimum requirement, brilliant. But then can we give them some feedback of how they can get to the next level? So if we're on a level one course, we'll also give them a little feedback about how can you take your development into the level two? What would you need to add to your toolbox that you could be doing a level two in 12 months time and past that? So we have to give them that kind of feedback. And if
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
If two of our coach developers are completely in disagreement of case A, maybe we need to sit down our two coach developers and go, okay, guys, what's your opinion on the minimum requirements? And if there's a discrepancy in terms of what is outlined on our course material, then we have a problem and we sit down with the coach developer. But if they're both happy that the minimum requirements are met, then we're happy with the candidate on the course.
So, you know, in essence, you're saying there has to be more collaboration and conversation between the coach developers to align on what a consistent approach might be, right?
No, most definitely.
The challenge, I've, you know, I've tried that approach, and I'm not saying that I have tried, you know, it's not work necessarily, but I guess the challenge that comes with that is depending on when we go through our qualifications, depending on what. So, you know, if you're a coach developer who's, let's just say you said you got your UEFA B license, right? You might have done your UEFA B 10 years ago in comparison to that of someone who's maybe done it 5 years ago. Obviously, courses have changed since then. Time frames have changed since then. And obviously, what is considered to be of a standard has also changed since then. So I think that piece is different, right? Because obviously aligning that conversation to the consistency of the approach in terms of assessment is obviously where a lot of discrepancy can be caused. So it's probably not a question for you to maybe to have a specific answer to, really, other than the fact of understanding what do we do if we don't agree.
I suppose it comes back to continuous professional development. Like, as coach developers, as the courses evolve, the coach developers have to evolve. So in terms of how I run our coach developers, they're assessed every 12 months. Okay, so we're keeping we're making sure that we're maintaining our standardization in terms of our coach developer assessments. They go through every January, they go through a 2-day review. This is the course you're going to be delivering this year. And then over the course of a full weekend, they take opportunities to different aspects of the course to each of the coach developers. So everybody understands, okay, this is where YAS is coming from. We're assessing you as you go. And you'll have to re-qualify through that weekend. And anybody we feel who's not meeting those requirements must then be reassessed. So you'll only be allowed to co-deliver. We won't allow you to deliver on your own because we feel maybe you're stuck in your mindset of a fixed mindset. And we can't allow that quality of coach development to occur because we really feel there's a lot of value in our coach development courses. So we maintain really, really high standards in our coach developers. And I think that's the most important. And I understand where you're coming from because I work in another sport where I am just the coach developer. I'm not the coach education manager. And I haven't been assessed in 3 years. But from my own perspective, I'm constantly trying to get better. So I go to coach development conferences. I go and do other courses. I get people to assess me because I want to become better. But that's me, where someone else with a fixed mindset, they've got qualified as a coach developer, box ticked, I'll go out and run courses. But then it's up to the likes of myself, the coach education manager, to maintain the high standards of coach developers out there.
Okay, so just on that then, you know, you're talking there about, you know, I guess exploring a couple of the different roles that you do. From a coach education manager perspective, and in comparison to that of being the coach developer, so what are the key things that you, I guess, you're looking at observationally? Because, you know, sometimes I'm thinking about these areas and I'm thinking about, how do I become the best coach developer I can possibly be, right? Where can I get the feedback? So I'm always asking for feedback. I'm always looking at it. And I think it's really important that we get that, because I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is, you know, sometimes our intentions don't meet our outcomes. And how we want the message to come across isn't always how the message lands, which is, you know, and that's fine, that's normal. But as long as we're understanding of where it has been maybe interpreted or misinterpreted, in alignment with what we want to, you know, get across. So, you know, where do you start with that? You know, what if from a coach education manager's perspective, where do you begin to explore? Right, these are the observations that we're going to make first and foremost.
I suppose it comes back to coach development, is the different hat we wear. So obviously I have a coach education manager hat, and then I will have coach development assessors under me, who are coach development officers, but they're assessors for a certain period of time. So we usually only allow someone to become an assessor if they've been a coach developer for 20 years. But in other sports, it's different. So we value experience. We value that life knowledge and life experience. So I suppose it depends on the hat. It depends on the time, the environment you're doing it in, because I suppose self-awareness is really important. This is why I was so passionate about doing my master's in self-care. As coach developers, we're getting out of a car, coming from home. We're going into a coach education format to run a course, and we need to be very self-aware of what we're bringing into that course. Am I able to leave my Stephen Maxwell, the person, at home, and when I get out of that car, put on Stephen Maxwell, the coach developer hat, going into that room? And that's really important. So I suppose being self-aware, and we do 2 modules every year for all the coach developers in terms of reflective practice. And one of them is being self-aware in a reflective practice way. And I think that's really important. And I suppose it goes back to what you were saying about the mindset of the coach developer. It's I suppose we're getting more value because a coach developer who's reflective is a growth mindset. And if someone who's struggling to reflect is a fixed mindset, and those kind of coach developers, we tend to move out of the system because they're holding back coach education and they're not evolving. And if they're unwilling to change, then they can't run our courses, because we want to run really high, really high quality courses. So if someone can be really reflective, and something I'm very good at, I've got two notebooks here in front of me at the moment. One way I reflect, and obviously I reflect because I wear a microphone when I'm coaching myself and when I'm coach development. And then I ask people to assess me. So I'll send them a voice note. This was me delivering 30 minutes. What do you think? Can I get some feedback? And asking that critical friend, or asking that mentor, or asking your mentee, and getting that, you know, maybe less life experienced coach to give you feedback, because they've been the participant. So it's great to get their perspective.
And that's a really useful one to do. Really, I think getting it from them. And I always say that, you know, you can learn from anyone, right? I think if you're learning from their perspective, essentially they're the audience. You want to know how it's hitting for them, and where they feel like it could be more valuable. But I guess, you know, there's beauty in the eye of the beholder, in the sense that however provides you that feedback is going to value it based on their potentially their own bias. And I it just makes me think about times where I've actually got feedback from people who've got nothing to do with what I do. And they ask you the most irrelevant but random questions about what you do and how you do it, because it really gets you thinking. It's like, why would you even think that? But I think that's the beauty of having someone who's outside of the industry, right? They're going to ask you whatever comes to their mind in relation to what you're doing. So I think that there's definitely some value in that. So I guess in terms of those qualities being observed and assessed and reflected on, what would you say are the key things that maybe a coach developer needs to have to really be effective in that role? Obviously, there is the element of prior knowledge. You talked there about a big value on experience, in particular with the organization that you're working with. However, you know, obviously different organizations might think about things slightly differently. So it's obviously, but you know, key to highlight that as well. But from a coach developer's perspective, what are the key attributes you're looking for? And the reason why I asked that question, because I'm speaking to a lot of coaches at the moment who have expressed an interest in going into coach development, but also a lot of coach developers who are currently in post in different roles in different organizations. And it's almost, you see it, especially in academy football as an example. You've got a lot of people going into coach developer roles, but would probably say they're not really coach developers. It's just a more senior role that's given them more bang for their buck. So, you know, what in terms of that difference between a coach and a coach developer, what are key things for you and the attributes that maybe a coach developer needs to possess to be successful?
I suppose their ability to change hat is really important. I see it all the time in different sports where coaches who are now acting as a coach developer really struggle with the hat. So they're standing in front of a group of coaches as a coach developer, but they're wearing their coach's hat. So their language, how they communicate it as a coach, whereas there's not that type of learning occurring then. So knowledge of the game is really important, irrespective of what game that is. Having an open mind, have an ability to interact with coaches as a coach developer and swap hats throughout the course. So when you're demonstrating, you're demonstrating with your coach's hat. When you're stepping back and asking questions, your coach developer hat is back on. And I suppose having a personality or having a positive personality is really important, because at the end of the day, you're entertaining. So you're entertaining a group of coaches. So you cannot be the most boring person in the world, because let's be honest, everybody's going to switch off. So you have to be able to engage a group of coaches. So that for us, that could be anything from 12 to 20 on a given course. And we have to be able to engage all those different types of personalities throughout the day and hold that engagement. And that's really important. So I suppose one of the key ones actually that's going to come up in our review in September is, what kind of tasks are you using as a coach developer? So can you set tasks? Can you interact and engage? Whether it's online, whether it's, we usually do maybe 2 hours online pre-course, this is what's going to occur. How are you going to engage people for 2 hours? How are you going to check for learning when they arrive? So people who are good at asking questions is really important. But I suppose it comes back to the personality type at the end of the day, because if you don't have an engaging personality, we can't put you in front of a group of people.
I completely agree with that. On the flip side, you know, as you're speaking there, what do you do if you, you know, what kind of tasks, it got me thinking as you mentioned it there, what kind of tasks might you engage the coaches in, or choose to engage the coaches in, if they're having a lack of engagement, if they're showing a lack of interest? Because again, they could be one of those people that are just doing it as a tick box. Obviously, I think part of the answer would lead us to thinking, right, well, why are they there? Let's tap into that first and foremost. What are their interests and how do we bring that up? Obviously, that's not always necessarily possible, because there's still a theme of content that you might need to cover within the course, right? So, you know, if you're getting that coach on the course, what kind of things are you, or have you done that you found very effective and useful for you in terms of engaging those?
I suppose it's get them out of their comfort zone. So whether it's in the classroom environment, it's getting them up, it's getting them on their feet, it's getting them interacting with different people and just creating a discussion that then will have an outcome of a task. So it could be, okay, guys, can we get into groups of four? Okay, what are the roles and responsibilities of a coach? Let's throw them on the sheet there. So that we're getting them up off the desk, or we're out in the middle of the pitch, they're on a whiteboard, and it's getting them interacting with other coaches. So they're not talking to me, because they might see me in a negative mindset, because I'm only there for them to tick the box. Whereas when they're interacting with other like-minded coaches, as they see it, they're happy to create conversations there. So I think getting them out of their comfort zone is really important.
That's really useful to get, really useful. I guess, you know, kind of just thinking back about certain coaches I've worked with in the past, and you do those group tasks, you do those peer tasks, and it's like you always get those one or two that are just coasting, sitting back, waiting for the task to finish. But just being able to say, yeah, I was here though. So, you know, it does make a difference to kind of try and get those people involved. And I think one of the things that I would often go with, rather than small group tasks, is always working in pairs. You can't get away from that one. there's nowhere to hide, right? You're going to have to engage in some way, shape or form. I think the challenge for the coaches beyond that is being in a position where you can actually then collaborate and exchange ideas. So not really useful to know. But Steve, you know, I'm conscious of time at the moment. Just from your perspective, then, where do you see coach development going forward in the next few years? Because at the moment, we're in a situation where obviously we're transitioning from what used to be a very much coach-led or coach developer-led environment to very much a coach-centered environment, in the fact that we're developing the learners and working with the learners. Where do you see that going forward? And are we in danger of maybe across the board in all different sports swinging too far down the other end of the spectrum?
I think the most important thing at the moment is to understand that all coach education courses are covering all the performance factors, so technical, tactical, physical and mental, right? So in terms of our coach developers, they're being tasked or educated how to facilitate the learning of those four. But I think the most important thing going forward is, how do we prepare our coach developers or our coaches to look after themselves? And I think that's the most important thing. As a society, we're becoming more and more negative in terms of sport. You know what I mean? Oh, Yas made this decision as a coach on game day, but I would have done it differently. So how do we educate our coaches to deal with those external factors? So it's not just about dealing with the players. What about the parents? What about the volunteer committee that appoints the coach? How do we educate coaches to deal with that? And that's why I find self-care really, really important. So as a coach developer, how do I educate coach developers to be very reflective in what they do in terms of their own career? Because some of our coach developers have a 9-to-5. We've got a doctor who's a coach developer, for example. So how do we get them to re-energize themselves to be coaches or coach developers? So I think we're going to move away from the four key performance factors and focus a lot more in terms of coach education on the lifestyle factor, that fifth performance factor. So relationships, building relationships, you know, creating those critical friends. Who's going to challenge you? Who's going to support you? And support that coach who's going through a tough time, because coaching is hard. It's not an art, it's not a science, it's a mix of a bit of both. So there's no right or wrong way. It depends on the environment. So how do we educate coaches into the future on how to deal with those challenges, I think is more important, because everybody's training coaches or training players physically the same way. Everybody's doing rondos, okay? Rondos are everywhere, right? But the only thing that's going to be different is how I deal with the players themselves, how I build relationships. But if I'm not self-aware as a coach, how do I develop a relationship with someone else? And I think that's the way coach education is going. It's possibly not there yet, but like one of your last guests, Cody, it's going down that route. It's just a little bit behind. And I'd like to think that coach education and cricket will be ahead of other sports in terms of that going forward.
I think you're spot on. I think definitely there is a lot more emphasis on social dynamics and in developing relationships within coaching as a whole, because it is getting much more around how do we support the individuals, you know, as people before they obviously go into becoming athletes and how we approach that. But I do fear that, you know, and I've seen this quite across a lot of sports where it seems to be less and less emphasis on, you know, what you'd consider the X's and O's, right? The technical, tactical stuff in relation to the game itself. I do sometimes wonder whether that is for the best of sport in general, not just specific to one. But I do sometimes wonder where we do still need a strong emphasis on that. But I also understand the value in the understanding that, you know, without being able to tap into the person, that stuff's not going to mean anything anyway. So I think there is that right, you know, that balance. And, you know, I like the way that you've not referred to it as an art or a science, but it is, I think, definitely very much a craft in a way that it will look right in some environments, but the way it looks right in some environments might actually be considered wrong in others. So there is a time and place for an approach, and there's a time and place for how we interact and engage with players based on context and the needs of the individuals within the environment. So I think there's definitely a lot of food for thought in terms of how you've explored that as well. Just, I guess, final thing for me really is any kind of final things that you'd hope coaches and coach developers listening to this will go away and start to think about in order to become closer to becoming that more self-aware as a practitioner in coaching or as a coach developer?
It's a really interesting question. I suppose I asked this on a course about 2 weeks ago, and I asked them, well, you're coaching every week, right? But what is your process? And I asked half of the room, and I got them to write it down. And they wrote it down, and then I asked them, okay, that's the first time you've put that on paper. Yes. Okay. Do you do that every single week? No. I do different things all the time. Okay. So you don't have a coaching process. So what if something goes wrong? What if your wife or your husband rings you on the way and you get some bad news? How are you going to bring that plan into your coaching? You're not going to be able to control your own behaviors because you don't have a process. So what I'd say to all your listeners is, do you have a coaching process? If you don't, how can you control the environment? So try and reflect on that. What do you do consistently, and how can you sustain that long term? And having a process allows you to do that.
Just on there, just to really unpack that a little bit. Coaching process, talk about consistency, talking about, you know, being able to re-implement and reinforce that. Would you argue that then the coaching process that you have is only based on the things that you do consistently?
Not that you could do, well, yes, what you do consistently, but in terms of your coaching process, how you interact with your players, okay? So when you arrive at training, how do you interact with your players? So do you ignore them? Do you say hello? That's part of your process. It's not the on-pitch stuff. It's how you deliver feedback. Do you have a set process? Or is it, yes, come here, that was terrible, you could have done this, you could have done that? Or do you have a set process? You sit down post-session. How do you think that went for you yet? And then what if you tried to do this? So I have a process for giving feedback. Mm-hmm. So the controllable things. So if you look at my coaching process, it involves how I put my management team together. So I have certain strengths and weaknesses. So I bring in someone in terms of my weaknesses, in terms of my administration, in terms of being a manager. So I bring in someone who's really good at that. I bring in an operations manager. I bring in a kit person. Okay, because I don't want to be carrying footballs to and from training all the time. So that becomes part of my process. When I'm dealing with under 18s, I make sure I have a person in my management team who deals with the parents, so I don't have to, because I want to focus on the pitch. I want to focus on the players. I don't want to deal with the parents. That becomes part of my process. So what is your process? And I think it's very important that every coach has one of them, because when things are going wrong, you need a plan to stick to. We can always change it as our coach evolves, but having a process is really important to deal with stuff when stuff goes wrong. This is my default. This is what I fall back to. And if you don't have that, then you're just going to keep falling.
I love the way you put it. Yeah, effectively have a plan. Plan to, what's that old saying? If you prepare to, if you plan to prepare, or how does it go? you fail to plan and you plan to fail. That was
you
it.
Put me on the spot yeah. there, Cameron.
But yeah, no, effectively that's what it is, right? It's, you know, just making sure that, you know, you have got a process. And I love the way you've put it there, because, you know, as you're speaking, it makes me think about, right, how do I interact? And my process is very much, I want to understand what you think. My process is very much understand from your perspective before I look to kind of offer any insight. And, you know, and as you were speaking there, it just made me think about some of the ways in which I even articulate my process to people. You know, and I often say, look, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions, but my questions aren't to catch you out. My questions to find out where the gaps might be that I might be able to help you fill. And that's kind of like the line I always lead with in terms of when I'm explaining and setting and managing those expectations, whether that be with coaches, whether that be with players. So I think it's really important to have that process and know what your process is. Because like you said, if you know the process, well, you can also look back at the process and say, right, where did it not quite work today? So I think that's it's really positive. So now I really appreciate, you know, your thoughts and insights on that. But Stephen, I'm really conscious of time as well. And just want to maybe give you an opportunity to share where people maybe can potentially get in touch with you and find out about a bit more about you and the work that you do away from, obviously, your 9 to 5 in terms of your consultancy and everything else.
Yeah, I suppose I mentioned the word consistent earlier. So in terms of my social media, it's consistent. So it's StephenMax2404 across all handles. And then from a business perspective, if anybody wants to get some coach education or mentoring, for example, it's Noga, NOGASPC on all social media as well.
Awesome. Stephen, really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much, man.
Yes, a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.